WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio presents Lehigh Valley Discourse. Provocative, informative, and newsworthy, Lehigh Valley Discourse brings you the people and the issues that move and shape our region here on WDIY.
Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This evening, we're going to have a special guest, somebody that's not unfamiliar with WDIY, but I will introduce him after I get through the introduction, because I really want you to pay attention to the background that I'm going to give you. And our focus is on the arts and the COVID impacts. We often don't give the arts community the respect it deserves for its impact on our local communities, especially the local economies. The first reason is that it's such a very diverse, I'm going to call it, industry, because we've got visual, theater, dance, music, and the creative end. And the second reason is that we often carry a wrong interpretation of nonprofit. Arts nonprofits are essentially cultural service providers that offer a wide range of positive social benefits, such as strengthening community ties, raising awareness of local issues, and expressing values of particular community groups. And that definition is from the Research Art Works. A nonprofit, also known as a not-for-profit, is a tax-exempt organization formed for religious, charitable, literary, artistic, scientific, or educational purposes. It is an incorporated business from which its shareholders or trustees do not benefit financially. And that's the key there. Keep that in mind. Any money earned must be retained by the organization and used for its expenses, operations, and programs. Nonprofits may have been viewed in the past as being less constrained by this need to make profits or satisfy political consideration. And that, to me, is very key, because a nonprofit is a business. So whether it's a for or a nonprofit, they need to make profits for sustainability, regardless of how the distribution requirements lead them. As I said as I introduced this, our show this evening is focusing on the arts, with a particular look at how COVID-19's impact will be and has been reshaping the various business models for providing arts to our local communities. And I'd like to provide you with a couple statistics before I introduce our well-known guest. Pennsylvania has 49,632 registered nonprofits. Of this amount, the Lehigh Valley is estimated to have 2,591, or about 3.8 nonprofits for every 1,000 people here in the Valley. Of this number, approximately 6% are related to the arts community, and this was provided by a study done by the Arts and Economic Prosperity 5 study. The number of people employed in this industry is 6,908. Local revenue impact, listen to this, local revenue impact is $7.1 million, and this is 2017. State revenue impact in 2017 was $11.7 million. Some of the studies aren't as up-to-date as I would have preferred, because everything has been thrown out of whack with this COVID environment, but a study done in 2015 by this same group, Arts and Economic Prosperity 5, a Citizens for the Arts in Pennsylvania Fourth Economic Impact Study of the Commonwealth's nonprofit arts and cultural organizations and their audiences revealed that they had generated over $3.4 billion in total economic activity, which in turn supported over 100,000 full-time equivalent jobs, yielding 2.2 billion household income, and they delivered over $402 million in state and local government revenue. So think about that. Think about nonprofit still has to be sustainable, what it does for the community as far as bringing it together, talking about issues, etc. And who better to join us tonight than Jeff Parks, who is the chairman of the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. He's the author of a book called Stronger Than Steel. He's the vice president of and COO of Alibi Music Library, and of course, former president of ArtsQuest for 31 years. And Jeff, I thought you were retired.
No, I'm still on the right side of the grass, so I guess I'm not retired.
Okay. Well, welcome this evening. Is there anything I left out in your brief bio here that you would like to add for our listeners?
I think that's a very complete bio, other than I'm still around and doing other things besides ArtsQuest right now.
Well, that's great. And again, thank you so much for being a guest this evening, because I think this issue, I think, has been very misunderstood with the COVID impact. And I'm really glad to have you here to share an insight into the arts, which has been so critical to our Lehigh Valley community and the regeneration through ArtsQuest, Music Fest, etc., of our community. So can you share with our listeners some of the basic background information of the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts so that they understand what you're doing?
In 1966, the federal government established the National Endowment for the Arts. The National Endowment for the Arts, from its inception, was designed in part to funnel federal funds to each of the states and territories of the United States. So each state, in turn, created a statewide entity that was primarily designed to receive federal funds, but if the state chose to do so, could also allocate state funds to support the arts in those states. Pennsylvania's Council on the Arts rests in the governor's office. It was created also in 1966. And since that time, the state has provided varying degrees of funding to the council in addition to the monies received from the federal government. Last year, let's say the year before all of this struck, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts received $9.5 million of state funding, which is for grants to institutions and individuals in the state for advancement of the arts. And approximately, I believe it's about $1 million, so $1.5 million from the National Endowment for the Arts, much of which is used for the administrative expenses of the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts. Approximately 1,600 organizations in Pennsylvania and individuals received grants from the Pennsylvania Council of the Arts in the fiscal year, the state's fiscal year, which is July 1st to June 30th, 2019 to 2020. Obviously, things have been a bit disrupted right now, but let me talk about the mission of the PCA, because I think that's important. We recently revised the mission of the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts back in 2018. We did a kind of a soul searching of what the council should be doing in terms of expending taxpayer funds to institutions for advancing the arts. And we revised the mission to focus on communities. So we have a statement, which I want to read to you, that a cross-cutting value that we use in applying our grants to the Commonwealth are diversity, equity, and inclusion. We want to promote equitable access for all Pennsylvanians to participate fully in a creative life and the diverse forms of arts and culture in the Commonwealth. We went on to actually talk about strengthening Pennsylvania communities through the arts, which is, as you may guess, near and dear to my heart. And I think an extraordinary benefit of the arts is to strengthen communities. We also want to connect and increase Pennsylvanians' access to lifelong learning through the arts, and we want to champion public awareness and appreciation of the arts in Pennsylvania communities. So those are our three primary goals, and we have adapted our grant-making process to reflect those goals. We have approximately 50 grantees or more in the Lehigh Valley, Lehigh and Northampton counties. And we have regional partners throughout the state who help us give smaller grants to organizations, municipalities, individuals who want to conduct arts-related programs in these various communities. So we have a very broad base in terms of supporting the arts, and we have much more work to do, particularly in communities that are still struggling with post-industrial development in terms of bringing the arts into the communities or supporting the arts in the communities and helping them regenerate.
Wow. And I think those three legs of the stool are extremely important, and I'm glad to see that your mission statement has now incorporated them. Could you repeat them again for our listeners so that they get those three?
By the way, all of this is available at the PCA website, arts.pa.gov. The three goals are strengthening Pennsylvania communities through the arts, connect and increase Pennsylvanians' access to lifelong learning through the arts. We do a great deal of funding with arts and education, both for K-12 schools, but also for seniors and people with disabilities. We work with the Veterans Department in Pennsylvania. And championing public awareness and appreciation of the arts in Pennsylvania communities. We have an abundance, as you can see, by 1,600 grants statewide, and we don't even cover all the arts organizations and artists. We have an abundance of creativity and arts in the Commonwealth, and our goal is to bring that out and let people know that it's here and access it.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things you mentioned was, you know, the industrialized communities that are still trying to come back. It has been very obvious that in many of our sort of distressed areas within Pennsylvania, the arts are the first group to get in and help to regenerate a community.
That's true for a variety of reasons. One of them is that artists tend to flock to places where the cost of living, including accessing housing and or places to work, is lower. And so we have many communities, both in-state and out-of-state, that have tried various ways in which to attract artists to the community, because they're at the vanguard of what comes next in communities. And, you know, that was the premise that we used starting with Music Fest and a lot of the things we did through Arts Quest. And I point to Bethlehem as an example of what the arts can do, but it's happened in many other communities. And we want to give other communities the opportunity to not use artists, but leverage skills that artists bring in attracting other creatives to the community. It's great if we have a conversation, but I'll bring it in now because I'm very big on this, and I think we need to understand the way the world is going. People have the opportunity to live and work wherever they want these days. When I was growing up and I was in college, you found a job with a company like Bethlehem Steel or General Electric or whatever, and you went where they sent you. And that was how you lived your life. Today, it's much different. Creative people can be and live anywhere and be accessing their economic benefits via the internet. Distance working is, thanks to COVID in part, is becoming a real thing. And many people who worked in offices are now, like me, sitting at home in their den and sipping a soda that they just poured out of their refrigerator in their fuzzy bunny slippers. So
that picture is amazing to me.
Well, life has changed dramatically. And my son started a company that I'm involved in now called Alibi Music. And we have 200 composers who, they're not employees, but they work with us in terms of music that we support. And they're all over Europe, all the way into Israel and South Africa, and all over the United States and Canada. So, you know, we didn't have to sit in New York or Los Angeles to find these composers or Nashville. Our staff is in London and on the West Coast and partially here in Pennsylvania. So it's an amazing opportunity for particularly communities in Pennsylvania, which for people who like four seasons and scenery and mountains and lakes and rivers and so on, we're pretty ideally situated to attract a lot of people who don't want to be in crowded cities and communities. And if you want to be in a crowded city that has a lot of features, we do have Pittsburgh and Philadelphia to offer. So I think we're going to be seeing more and more of these distance workers cropping up and having a choice of where they want to live. And most people want to have some access to the arts and to culture in the place where they live. And that's a huge draw. We've experienced it here in the Lehigh Valley. We have benefited from not just Arts Quest and Music Fest and so on, but the rich cultural heritage we have throughout the mm-hmm. Lehigh Valley, mm-hmm. from the State Theater to the Allentown Art Museum to whatever.
Bach Choir,
absolutely. So it is important for us to have those cultural institutions as part of a healthy and viable economic community.
Jeff, let me just go to the other side of that thought that you have. With the ability to sort of do what you want at a distance, does that also impact artists gathering together in a location, you know, which is what we've had up until this point in our communities, where they come together and they form their own arts community within, and then that spreads out. So is that at risk?
I don't think artists gathering in communities will change all that much. I think the biggest experiment in that is going to be New York City. None of us really realizes what's going to come out of this in terms of the viability of some of our bigger cities and whether all these office towers are going to now be restructured into residential. You know, I don't think we really know what's going to happen. We're all praying that Broadway comes back as soon as possible. But even in our major cities, in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, it's had a dramatic effect on, right now, artists being able to gather on a stage or in any way, shape, or form. We're all living in unprecedented times, and we don't really know what's at the end of the tunnel.
Now, in your book, Stronger Than Steel, you talk about a lot of the impacts of the arts in the community. And I'm wondering if we can spend a couple moments or two before our first break and talk about some of the key points in Stronger Than Steel that you picked up on and that you've taken with you to the Council on the Arts as well.
Well, I think the biggest opportunity with the arts is the capacity to bring people together in a geographic space so that they can realize that they're not really that different from each other. I lived through this in the years of Music Fest as Bethlehem was changing in terms of the people who live in the community, all the way up to today where 32% of Bethlehem residents are Latino heritage, and learned that having an event that started out, frankly, as comfort food for the traditional residents of Bethlehem, the people who started the churches on the south side and on the north side, and evolved into an event that learned through input from the community how to adapt to be inviting to all those who are living in the community now. I saw that we didn't have the same issues that some other communities do because we all gathered at the same place and we all ate island noodles and we all listen to different styles of music, and it was a non-threatening environment where we could all be together. And I've seen that repeatedly in other arts events. You know, we're not all Irish when we go to Celtic Fest, but you become Irish for a weekend.
Yes.
So, you know, there is this unique thing that brings us together, and it is the arts. We need more arts to invite people to gather, invite people to discuss their issues, frankly, and that's done. I think Touchstone Theater is kind of notorious for doing that and done a great job of it in terms of bringing current issues, social and political issues, to the fore in an environment where it's not threatening. It's a place where you can discuss these issues.
Listeners, we're going to take a short break here. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. Our guest this evening is Jeff Parks, and our theme for this evening's program is a focus on the arts and the impacts of COVID-19. This is Sally Hanlon.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all of our programming possible. Becoming a member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure we'll be here for the next person in our community to discover. The many choices and real voices you hear every day would not be here without your support. Make your membership gift today at WDIY.org.
WDIY is pleased to partner with the Bethlehem Rotary Club, presenting Taste and Tunes Dessert Edition, an online bakery auction, Sunday, October 4th through the 18th. Bid on desserts for your special occasion, pick up at your convenience. Event proceeds benefit the Northeast Community Center to continue the work they do with children and families and the philanthropic work of the Bethlehem Rotary Club. For more information, BethlehemPARotary.org.
Listeners, welcome back. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, and my guest this evening is Jeff Parks. And our conversation is about the arts and the impacts of COVID-19 and what is happening in the arts community. Just before the break, we were talking about how through some of the arts, the community comes together. And Jeff, I don't know if I ever told you this, but there was a consultant that I heard once who talked about the concept of glocal. And glocal is the more we get global in our daily lives, the more we need local to be around us. So, you know, I think that sort of describes a little bit about the importance of the arts. But let's hear about this study that was done that you're aware of and anything else you want to share about how the arts help the communities beyond the economy.
Well, first of all, let me say that having had a career for 35 years in an arts/community development organization, I would always bristle at the kind of requirement that you produce a study that shows your economic impact, because I always felt that that did not represent the full value of what arts contribute to communities. Yes, we do hire other artists, we do hire staff, we do have an impact on hotels and restaurants and all kinds of businesses in the community. And we do attract creatives to the community who start their own businesses, and we are a basis for encouraging people to come to the communities. But there's another side of the valuation, and a woman named Lisa Eukman, who is well known in the sports and entertainment industry, started her own company because she felt the same way. She felt that these sports and entertainment and arts were undervalued in terms of what they bring to a community. She created a company called Pro Social that started to measure community impact of these events and organizations. And what Pro Social does is recognize three sets of what they call capital: community capital, civic capital, and human capital. This isn't a good venue for me to talk about all of them, but community capital includes things like community regeneration, how you attract people and how they get attached to your community, and how you create a brand for your community. Civic capital means how you develop social cohesion within the community, how you develop city engagement, civic engagement. And human capital means how you develop academic achievement, how you create additional skills and opportunities, and most importantly, the health and well-being of a community, which is, through many studies, the arts are proven to support health and well-being. They did a study, and it's now, I think, a year and a half old, just on ArtsQuest and its many prongs, Banana Factory, Steel Stacks, Music Fest, Chris Kindlemart, and so on. And while the economic impact of ArtsQuest is measured through different means, and that annual economic impact is about $150 million, they came up with about $100 million in additional impact in terms of this community capital, civic capital, and human capital. And I think they've, you know, whether their methodology could be questioned or not, it is the beginning of an academic field that I think will resonate with communities and saying, hey, you know, it's not really about the number of people attracted to the audience for this or that. It's really about how it brought the community together, how it afforded us outlets, how it helped us reach out to each other and feel a part of this community, and how we branded this community externally. I remember going to conferences when we first started Music Fest back in the 80s and people looking at me sadly that I was from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, you know, kind of the poster child for industrial loss. That changed by 2005, and nowadays it's a whole different story in terms of, oh, Bethlehem, and, you know, we took that old blast furnace and we made it part of the brand of the community, and we made it a place for civic celebration, and we're proud of our past, but we're more excited about our future. That's what the arts has the potential to do, and having lived through that, I've become an advocate for communities to look at those opportunities. It's not about bringing new people into the community, changing the community in any way. It's about celebrating who you are, the people who are in the community. And once you feel good about your community and you talk about your community, and I always point to any volunteer at Music Fest in particular is there because they're very proud to celebrate their community with the many guests that we get from around the world. I think once people say good things about their community, the community is off and running, and the arts really help that happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bob Rodale years ago had a whole program that he developed for the Rodale Institute where he would go out to communities and talk to them about rebuilding communities. And the key seed that he used is you build a community by focusing on the positive aspects. You don't build a community by trying to fill in all the gaps that you know exist or addressing the negative. You start by building on the positive, and that positive then begins, like it's a pebble in the water. It expands mm-hmm. out, which sounds very similar to what you're sharing as well.
It absolutely is. When I used to go out and do slide presentations, which is ages ago, I had somebody from my staff dig up an internet copy of a billboard that was on the Schuylkill Expressway when I went to law school in Philadelphia in the early 70s. And I will never forget this. It was a Chamber of Commerce's motto for that year. And the motto was, Philadelphia is not as bad as Philadelphians say it is.
Oh, geez.
You know your community's in trouble when you have to have that billboard. If you're not proud of your community, if you're not proud to be a part of your community, if you don't feel accepted in your community, if you feel that people like me aren't welcomed here, you're not going to say that. So I think that's what the arts have the opportunity to do, if they're allowed to do it, to make people feel welcome, to make them a part of it, and to encourage dialogue between different people in the community. All of that is possible and non-threatening in an arts and culture-related environment.
Well, and for new people coming into the area, I've heard from multiple folks that have relocated to the Lehigh Valley how their first sort of network of friends was through the arts contacts they've made.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Yes. That
it's because it's hard to know, and you know, when you're working, and sometimes it's even hard, we don't even know our neighbors, but getting into, you know, an arts activity, event, whatever, and has really had them develop the roots.
Absolutely. And it is hard when you move into a new community to meet people and to reach out. But arts also are a thread of common interest that you can share with people. And
correct.
And it may be one of the reasons that you've been attracted to that community to begin with.
Yes. Well, now let's talk a little bit about pre-COVID-19 and how the arts were doing, and then what you have seen sort of impacted and the areas that the arts have to sort of reimagine, reinvent going forward. And I'm talking about, I mean, we all know that we can't do large events. So what was the arts community like just before COVID, and now how is it readjusting? How are you helping them reimagine?
Well, there's been some, needless to say, dramatic changes. Let me start, first of all, by sharing with the audience how arts nonprofit organizations are operated, and stress that the arts are not just represented in nonprofits. The arts are represented in many, many, many different ways in many different companies through folks like graphic designers and people who do videos and create internet sites and all those things. Creativity is essential in any modern business these days. So the arts were, particularly in the Lehigh Valley, thriving in a very vibrant economy before COVID. And our focus at the council on communities, we had just started a new program in which we had 101 applications throughout Pennsylvania for a $25,000 a year grant for 4 years. We were able to offer that to four different communities. And they really had to come up with a creative plan to revitalize their communities using the $25,000 as seed money. They had to have at least another $25,000 in matching funds. And people were really excited about developing much of what we've just talked about, communities where people feel welcome, communities where all people can participate, and kind of a rebranding of both two of the more inner city communities and two of the more post-industrial communities. But that focus has now kind of fallen apart. I don't know about everybody else in the Lehigh Valley, but I feel pretty arts deprived at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm obviously a senior citizen, so I'm avoiding going to any place regardless of what the guidance is. I think that, and many people are. So the arts changed dramatically because, you know, we spent years kind of lecturing arts organizations that they needed to be more reliant on earned revenue. As a nonprofit, earned revenue is money that you receive for selling a ticket for admission, offering your space for a special event, a wedding or a party or whatever, selling food and beverage. All of these things are available to many nonprofits, and our thing was you really need to do more of this because you can't rely on philanthropy, which
right.
is supports nonprofit organizations as well. And many of us donate to nonprofits. We write out a check and we value their cause, and that's important too. But it historically, it's less reliable than earned income. Well, along comes COVID, and those nonprofits that took our advice and really, you know, focused on earned revenue are the ones that are now suffering even more so, because both philanthropy has dried up a little bit and earned revenue has dried up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, you can think of your nonprofit arts organization as your local restaurant. It's the same issue. We can't bring all these people together that we did before. We can't. If you have a 400-seat theater and the government says you can only seat 100 people in that theater, and, oh, by the way, everybody has to be socially distanced, so the people on the stage have to try to be socially distant. It's impossible. I mean, there are people who are trying to work this out, but it's virtually impossible. People who have art museums or art exhibits or art galleries are restricted in terms of the number of people who can be in it. And if you're doing education, we've all seen the challenges that public education is going through. So the arts are in what I think is a Darwinian situation right now. We are at the council now trying to analyze how many organizations we can expect to survive this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the longer this goes, the more challenging it's going to be. We know some organizations have already decided to shut their doors, to close up. Many organizations don't have savings, if you will,
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
you know, an endowment that especially smaller arts organizations, but also big ones. There's a couple of big ones that are teetering on the edge as well. So the situation has changed dramatically. It's very hard for an arts organization to argue that we're in dire straits and we need money when there are safety net organizations for people who are going to bed hungry, who have no shelter, who, you know, really, really need the money to support their mission as well. And you don't want to be in a position where you're actually in either support the arts or either support people who are going to bed hungry. So it is a huge challenge, and I think what's happening in many organizations is that they are going to wind up laying off staff, probably indefinitely, which means you'll lose people who have different skill sets in managing arts organizations, and they will find other work elsewhere and may not be available when things start to come back. You'll also have huge challenges coming back because, you know, it's not all going to happen at once. It's going to happen gradually that people will be untrained to avoid being in crowds, to have masks and so on. So the road ahead is bleak in terms of the traditional arts organizations that we've been used to rolling back. When will it be safe to have a music fest? When can Chris Kindlemark gear up? When can we all be wearing our kilts at Celtic Fest? I don't know, and that's the big challenge.
Yeah, and just like other industries, I mean, we've got nothing to sort of anchor our thoughts for the future because it's just so unknown and unsettled at this point.
Well, and the other part is that historically in Europe, the sovereign and then the liberal democracies supported the arts from the national government. That's a historic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, as we mentioned, that federal government support didn't start till 1966, and in terms of the budget of the United States, it's a very small amount. In Europe, particularly Germany and the UK, United Kingdom, there have been several tranches of funds to support the nonprofit arts organizations, to support the artists during these very difficult times. That's not happening in this country. The CARES Act, Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, received just enough money to send approximately $500 out to each of our 800-plus organizations in the state who have budgets of between, I think it's 200,000 and, you know, millions. We couldn't figure out a fair way to do it, so we just divided it by 800, and we sent out $500 and some to everyone and said, if you're not going to use it, please send it back so we can try to support somebody else. Well, that's just, I don't want to say it's laughable because every penny counts, but in terms of public investment, it probably wasn't effective. Those organizations that received $500 and were going to go belly up next month, it may have kept the lights on for a week or so. It's just, there is no commitment nationally and in any state that I know of to not lose the arts that we have had.
Wow. I was wondering how you came up with that figure of 500, because when I was thinking about and doing research for the show, I mean, that the unemployment check that people got was higher than that, and that was more of an ongoing opportunity. And I'm sure, based on a lot of small businesses that weren't prepared to be able to apply for the CARES grant or potential grant, that some of the arts organizations were probably in that same bucket, that they didn't have all the documentation and everything together that would have allowed them to apply for CARES funding.
Well, I do know that several of the arts organizations did apply for and receive PPP, right?
Right, PPP, yep.
So that was some help. They're in the same position as many small businesses. But that's not going to help if you can't open the doors for another year.
Right.
And every legitimate source that we've spoken with does not expect that to happen until fall of next year at the earliest.
Wow. Can we take a short break here on that thought? And I'd like our listeners to think about that fall a year from now, fall 2021. You are listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse, talking with Jeff Parks on the arts and the impact of COVID-19. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Are you interested in inspiring and informing future generations through WDIY's programming? A gift through your will, retirement plan, or estate plan is a wonderful legacy to leave to those that will need a trusted place to hear what's going on in the world. For information about naming WDIY as a beneficiary, please call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org/legacy.
Hi, I'm John Dodds, a jazz presenter on WDIY. Like you, I'm sure, I've been lifted by the rich mix of music that WDIY has continued to air throughout the pandemic. Even in our most challenging months, the music played on. Music that has offered a sense of continuity and familiarity in a world filled with uncertainty. That is thanks to the real voices you enjoy on our station, who choose the music you love to hear day and night on WDIY. It is the knowledge and commitment of every programmer that has continued to ensure our musical diversity. If you share my admiration for their work, please click the donation button on our website, wdiy.org. At WDIY 88.1, we are proud to be the trusted choice of our community at this time of challenge and renewal. Thank you for being a loyal listener.
Listeners, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, this is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse, and my guest this evening is Jeff Parks. And we're having a conversation about the arts and the impact of COVID on the arts, just like it's impacting every one of us. But we felt it important to talk about this aspect. Just before the break, Jeff had shared that in European countries, particularly Germany and the UK, that there's a lot more government support for the arts and helping them get through rough times like this is. But here in the States, our government is not in the same boat. So, Jeff, how is public policy? How do we work this out going forward, because, you know, I was just saying the arts help us escape from the everyday impact that COVID's having on our lives. I mean, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day most of the times. But so how is public policy? What is it? What can we change about it? How do we do it?
Well, first of all, you know, we're talking at a time when the airlines are saying that they're going to lay off tens of thousands of people, hotels and restaurants. Everybody in the travel and tourism industry is suffering. But what many people forget is the reason, one of the main reasons people travel is for arts and culture. And even if you can reopen that hotel, even if you can send a plane to that destination, if their version of Broadway is closed, if Music Fest doesn't happen, the Hotel Bethlehem's not going to make as much money as it normally does. You know, Manhattan's going to be deserted. There's really never been a true understanding in terms of public policy and supporting the arts. And so what's going to happen, it has not been mentioned once in terms of these negotiations. Yes, the airlines have great lobbyists. The artists and the arts organizations, not so much. So the airlines may or may not get bailed out, and many other industries that have a lot of employees. But I guarantee you that the arts and culture industries have far more employees than the airlines. So what should our public policy be, and how do we want these folks to come out of it? Do we want to have a rapid reemergence of the arts after the disease passes, after the pandemic passes? Or are we going to allow them to slowly try to crawl back on whatever resources they can rely on? Because don't forget, both philanthropic resources are going to be reduced, and the ability to attract staff who have wandered off elsewhere, you're not going to have a lot of experienced folks there. So it is a huge challenge, and we have to, first of all, I think, advocate to the federal government, because the states are all in very difficult financial situations, that there should be a relief package for the arts and arts organizations. And whether that's a reemergence package for late next year, early 2022, or whether it's a sustaining package that starts now, I don't know that. I have no real answer to that. That's actually a subject that we are discussing internally right now in terms of what to advocate for. But there has to be a solution, or the destinations that rely on arts and culture are going to have a severe time regenerating their commercial businesses.
You know, I hadn't really thought about the reason for all the travel, and even though I understand travel and tourism and all that kind of stuff, but the important role that the arts are at the base of helping that market to come back. All we think about, or all we hear about, I should say, is bring the quote unquote the private industry back, you know, and all the money that's gone to the private industry. I mean, they can only do so much business travel. And quite honestly, it's easier for them to do conferences virtually than it is to get the full experience of an art performance virtually. Wow. I mean, that's an incredible concept and dilemma that we have. And I don't think, I haven't heard anything, even with all the presidential stuff going on, I haven't heard of the plan for us to come out of this and slowly get back to our world in the U.S. I don't think there's a plan. I think it's like a knee jerk.
Well, historically in this country, the arts have relied upon the kindness of strangers, if you will. But each organization is going to have to go back to their supporters and figure it out without any public funding or support if nothing happens right now. And they're, you know, artists have great skill sets, but many of those skill sets don't involve running a business, which is why there are arts organizations with professional types of business people who manage them. Once those people wander off into other territories, I'm afraid of that loss for many of the organizations. The Kimmel Center in Philadelphia has, I think, laid off almost all of their employees because they were over 90% earned revenue. These are challenges that are going to be faced. Fortunately, the weekend after New Year's this past year, 2020, my wife and I went to Philadelphia specifically to go to four museums that we hadn't been to ever, even though we met when I was at law school in Philadelphia. And we had a delightful weekend. We went to restaurants. We stayed at a hotel down there. And the reason we went there was specifically because of these four less visited museums. What happens if these museums run into deep trouble, don't have huge resources to draw on? It's going to be very challenging as we move forward. And it's unfortunate that nobody has yet reached out on a national policy to say, this is how we're going to reemerge in terms of the arts and culture sector.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I'm thinking about one of the statistics that I mentioned, that we have about 2,500 nonprofits in the Lehigh Valley. And as you pointed out, it's not just nonprofits that are affected in the arts community. But, you know, one of the things I've always struggled with here in the Lehigh Valley is that I think we have too many nonprofits. And is now a time for people to rethink their business and their service area, their model, to think about who they could join forces with to be stronger in the community?
Well, you know, every crisis creates opportunities. And yes, I think there are opportunities to rethink ways in which people are doing business, to possibly have arts organizations band together. There's all kinds of different things that can be done. There are many different models, and it's going to take some creativity to figure all of that out. The good part of this, Sally, is that, you know, and I feel like I have to mention this, is that artists will continue to create. I'm worried about whether they put food on the table, but I'm not worried about them continuing to create. I always talk about a friend of mine who I won't name, but worked as a house painter for 25 years till he was discovered and finally was able to drop the house painting and just do his art full time. But this is a person, like many artists I know, who can't do anything. They're driven to do their art, whether they're a playwright, an author, a musician, a painter, and so on. Creators will continue to create. That's the wonderful part about this community, is that they will continue to create. The question is, how will we support them? How will we keep these people enriching our lives when they have to worry about feeding a family, feeding themselves, housing, all that kind of stuff? So it part of the challenge, as somebody who was a presenter, meaning that we didn't pay the artists as a salary. We hired artists to come in and perform for shows, concerts, and so on. I recognize that these artists who aren't touring now, who are not able to get a gig, if you will, either at a bar or at a festival or whatever, they're hurting, you know? And thank God that the internet is available for them to go to some of these streaming services and put their music on there and collect some money from that. But it's a huge challenge. So how do we reemerge from this? How do we get these artists? You know, the best thing you can do is say, we're going to support the organizations that are going to pay these artists, and we're going to get back going pretty rapidly so that our communities don't suffer even further. Will that happen? I don't know.
It's going to take some serious rethinking of the role models. I mean, I have been extremely impressed with what ArtsQuest has been doing with their concerts and presentations on Zoom, and how they're changing things to still meet the need. They've got a lot of creative power, but there are a lot of smaller ones that, quite honestly, they haven't really been able to embrace the technology opportunity yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, trying to build a model in an area that you don't really know much about is very difficult. Is the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, are they looking to consult to help some of these smaller organizations maybe understand what they could do with technology or coming together or anything like that? I mean, I know the overall is an amazing task when you're thinking strategy and reemergence, but what about some of the smaller steps?
Well, at the PCA website, we do have resources page for COVID for artists and arts nonprofits. I would encourage, if anybody is an artist or an arts nonprofit, to go to that research reference page for COVID, again, arts.pa.gov, and look at that. Do we have a specific plan as the PCA to do technology consulting and so on? No. We are not funded well enough to do something like that. Okay. And frankly, our mission is the grantor to disperse public funds based upon the criteria that we've set to support arts organizations and artists. So would it be great if that existed? It would be fantastic. I understand what you're saying. It's about capacity. So mm-hmm. if an arts organization is small and does not have the technology capacity, they're either not going to be able to use technology to support themselves, or they're going to have to pair with others who can help them. And that's where the creativity is going to have to come in. I think this pandemic is going to be Darwinian in terms of what's left in terms of arts that, very much like restaurants, one restaurant may go out of business, but the people who created that may be back to start another restaurant if they financially can afford it. I think those arts that are in demand will ultimately come back, but the question is how long will it take, how good will it be, and will they still be part of the community that they were in? Will they migrate to communities that have greater resources to support them?
Yeah, I would like to challenge our listeners to take a moment during this show and just think about what the Lehigh Valley would be like without our arts organizations. I mean, Jeff had, you know, been a big part of founding Music Fest and Arts Quest, but think about all the other arts organizations, whether it's theaters, whether it's education programs in the schools, Touchstone Theater. I'm sorry to say this, but in my mind, this would be the end of the steel industry without any future.
Well, again, yes. I don't think it's... I wouldn't want to be that dramatic because, as I said, creators will continue to create. Some things will come back, maybe in different formats, maybe with different people. The theater programs in the Lehigh Valley have evolved. You know, I'm hoping I can go to the Shakespeare Festival next summer, but I'm thinking I probably won't be able to. There are many great things in the Lehigh Valley, and I think all of us, and there's many great things in this country, all of us should be thinking about how, what we can afford and what we cannot afford. And we cannot afford not to have culture.
That's correct.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we can afford to support commercial businesses like airlines, can we not afford to support community businesses like arts and culture organizations?
Especially in this day where there's such polarized things happening in communities. And as you said in the very beginning, Jeff, you know, the arts tends to be bring people together, to be a common thread, to, you know, celebrate whatever it is the art form is providing. Probably more than ever today, we need it.
I would say that we're screaming for it at this point.
Yeah.
And we're screaming to understand each other and to find ways in which we can bring ourselves together in community format where we can agree, even if it's agreeing to disagree.
Right.
The civility factor, and as I mentioned in that pro-social evaluation of ArtsQuest, it's the civic engagement. It's the more we are engaged with the community that we're in, the more we are accepting of our fellow residents, our fellow community members, the more we can civically discuss both local issues and national issues, and the more that we can understand what our fellow citizens are talking about, the better off we're going to be.
Wow.
We've lost a lot, and that's driven by the media that we're almost forced to watch now. I mean, I don't know what everybody else is doing, but I sit and watch TV every night.
I've stopped, Jeff.
I do read books or listen to Audible, but, you know, we're being given our choices of both broadcast and streaming and, of course, YouTube. So that's where everybody's at. And much as there's a lot of creativity there and they are, you know, great platforms, all of them, it doesn't bring the community together.
On that note, Jeff, I'm sorry we've got to end our conversation. As always, I could always talk at least another hour with you, if not more, because you have so much great information and perspective. So I want to thank you for spending the time with us tonight and sharing this learning opportunity for our listening community. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Sally, and thank you for sharing the word about the arts. We appreciate it and look forward to speaking with you again.
Sounds great. Listeners, we're wrapping this up. Thank you for taking the time to listen this evening. This is Sally Hanlon for Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Welcome back to our fall membership drive. I'm Executive Director Greg Caponia, along with Seamus McGrogan.
Hey, Greg.
Hi. How are you doing, Seamus? We have some important things to ask our membership today. We're asking you to make a donation or become a member, become a sustaining member, become a one-time giver. Help us keep producing great music, great information for you, our listener, and we have an opportunity to help feed some people, don't we?
Running right now during our fall membership drive, we have a partnership with Second Harvest Food Bank of the Lehigh Valley. And if you've listened to WDIY in the past during our fall membership drives, that name will sound familiar. It will sound familiar because we've partnered with them before. We love doing this. It's a great way to turn the donations we get to help the station into meals for the community.
And Seamus, we also want to thank Valley National Financial Advisors for being our co-sponsor in this fall fund drive. Do you know that we have provided over 69,000 meals to Second Harvest?
That's an incredible amount of meals. And that's all from member donations. And this is a great way to help the community right now, because you're going to be contributing money to WDIY. But at the same time, Valley National Financial Advisors is stepping in and making a separate donation for every $100 WDIY raises right now during the drive. Second Harvest is going to be able to provide 21 meals to those in our community.
If you'd like to learn more about Second Harvest and how Valley National Financial Advisors helps us out, go to WDIY.org and listen to On Every Main Street, where we interview Katara, the executive director, to learn more about their mission.
Second Harvest really is a great organization. We love partnering with them, and it is a great double benefit right now that's only running during our fall membership drive. The way that you could donate, again, is by going to our website, wdiy.org. We also have operators standing by at 610-758-8810. Become a member of the station. Renew that membership. Give a little extra. For every $100 we raise, Second Harvest Food Bank is going to be able to provide 21 meals to people in our community.
I don't know if you've ever been by Second Harvest. Seamus, I know you have.
Yes.
If you haven't and you are a listener and you can help them out, have a team participation program where you would go in and help them fill boxes, move food, they could really use your help. This is such an incredible place. It's the size of two gigantic warehouses. It has loading docks where trucks back up and get donations from local food providers, and they also are very good at providing fresh food, which is so important.
Yeah, you go there and they have the refrigerators there. They're providing fresh food. They're providing packaged food and canned food. So they're really getting all this great food out to all sorts of agencies like soup kitchens and food pantries in the area. We know that not everybody can go to the facility in Nazareth and help Second Harvest out by moving boxes and loading shipments up. But a great way to give, if you can't do that, is by supporting WDIY right now during our fall membership drive. Because, like we're saying, every $100 translates into 21 meals that they can provide. So if you have time right now, if you have the means, we would really appreciate a donation to the station to help us continue our mission here at WDIY, while also giving a double benefit to Second Harvest Food Bank of the Lehigh Valley. The way to do it is to become a member at 610-758-8810 or go online to our website, wdiy.org.
Thank you.